is when we find out that his leg has been harvested.
Yes, it has been cut off, which you noted was cut off horizontally.
No, his was vertical.
His was vertical?
Yeah, all the amputees I've seen, and mind you, I'm not an expert, but it's always been vertical. I think the seams close easier that way, but okay. Other than that, it looked very real. I mean, maybe a little exaggerated, but very much like what an amputee looks like.
Okay, so just to be clear, his was vertical.
Yep, up and down.
And it shouldn't, and it's normally horizontal.
From what I've seen.
Okay. At least from, yeah, okay.
So Howard tells him that it was a brown recluse. So Howard says that Dr. Bustier does it, but then it's Moustier, and then it's like Mustier. Like the doctor name, I've noted, changes throughout the entire scene, and then the doctor is never brought up again because
the name is brought up.
Oh,
the name is brought up. Bernard Moustier. Don't know how that's spelled. Oh. But that was when that's later when Johnny Depp is talking with him.
Well, I will also point out that Howard also offers him a drink.
Mm-hmm.
In a certain vessel, he hands him the Slurpee cup.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I think I might love the Slurpee cup, and I don't want to, but I do.
Yeah.
I might have had an addiction at one time.
And this is another scene where Michael Park ends up just like he kind of is a little bit. He plays it as though he's a little bit out there. And so he's saying things like, oh, yeah, you had a spinal injection and, you know, the doctor was here, but now the doctor isn't there anymore. And when Wallace,
who is heavily drugged,
asked for his phone so he can call people, he says, oh, the doctor stepped on it. And, you know, he's just coming up with all these different things. It's like, again, I had talked about how Wallace is kind of, you know, this guy who has like those quick whips. He has like an answer for every kind of question that someone comes up. Someone has like criticism of what he does, and he has a response to it, and it's generally coming right away. But when you stop to think about it, it seems like it's still a little bit unsteady. And Michael and Howard kind of does the same thing too. So Wallace kind of treats Allie the same way that Howard treats Wallace. So those two scenes are kind of back to back.
I had not even thought about that.
Yeah,
that is true.
I did have one thing to say. When Wallace is coming to at the beginning of that scene, Howard is polishing a tusk,
which we know he made out of the femur of the leg he just removed.
Mm-hmm.
And my notes later on.
Would that have been? Because his femur wasn't actually cut off. It was the tibia and the fibula because of the lower half.
I meant tibia and fibula then. Yeah, I don't know. Sorry. I don't know anatomy. I only know.
Don't mean to nitpick.
No, that's okay. I only know megafauna. From that one class I took.
I honestly thought it was just a tusk because the movie's name is Tusk.
Well, they touch on it because in the later scene when we meet Quebec detective guy. I should really write down names. I'll do it later. You remember names. I'll remember how the story goes.
Okay.
He said that one of the telltales of the previous victims was that they found a piece of his tibia. Mm-hmm. Now I got you. Tibia in the socket that they found in a previous victim.
Right.
So they're like, why was his tibia in his face hole? Mm-hmm. And that's how we know that he was literally polishing his leg in front of him and he's about to shove it in his face.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So then he goes like, we sup strictly at 6 p.m. And then there's a cut to dinner. And I said this while we were watching it just now, but like, what did they do? I mean, it was mid-afternoon. I would guess maybe at least an hour or two. Like, he had to make dinner and he's still like in the chair. He's still in the chair when he's like going to make dinner. Like, what did he do for like 2 hours? Did he just go stroke his cup sadly? Touch his leg stump?
I mean, generally when those things happen, you know, it's just like random stuff. Why didn't Wallace, like, what are you asking? Like, what did Wallace do or what did Howard do?
Howard had to go make dinner.
So what did Wallace do? Did he stroke his
stump? I don't know. There's a couple things that make me mad. And it's not even making me super mad. There are things that you couldn't as a storyteller. And I already nitpicked. I would take 10 minutes off this movie's runtime.
Yeah.
There are things that you just can't address. One of them is that a tibia is porous in the middle. And the tusk he's polishing in the scene is a solid piece. There's no none of the spongy part that you would see if it was an actual bone.
Yeah.
Which is super super stupid to like debate about, but it makes me mad that that's a minor detail. To supper, which by all means is one of the best scenes in the entire film.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down full psycho during dinner. We really do like launch into the first time Wallace really breaks down, and the first time that
Howard
really walks out onto the stage.
I see what you did there.
Thanks.
Because he's not actually like his legs actually work. He doesn't need to be in a wheelchair.
Wallace questions him about the spider bite that supposedly led to his amputation. And then freaking Michael Parks made my skin crawl. And that doesn't happen very easily unless I see like a weevil bug, which are the worst. And he's all like, he sings the Itsy Bitsy Spider with his little hand gestures up like little velociraptors. And he's like, the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And like, and Wallace is officially losing it. He's been drugged so hard up to this point since the tea that he doesn't know what's going on. He's like, you're a psychopath. And then Howard stands up and is just like, no, you motherfucker.
Well, he comes over and he slaps him because he swore in his house, which, I mean, again, going back to the first time they met, it was obvious that he didn't really like. He felt like that kind of behavior, swearing. And, you know, the note that I made in the scene is after he slapped Wallace was no swearing in his house, but human mutilation. A-OK.
It's true because he's got a great he has a grand design in mind. In fact, right after he slaps him and he informs him of his plan, he totally full supervillains on him. He's just like, and here's my plan. And the two quotes from this scene that are delightful and shall be written on my tombstone are,
whilst in the walrus suit, you must be a walrus.
That's a good one.
Thank you. And then, of course, at the end of the scene, and maybe you should answer. Oh, you did answer this while we were watching it.
I did.
So while we're watching this, like, I knew this line was coming, and I like look over at Lydia, like trying not to like super side eye her to see how she responds. She responds, but Michael Parks delivers this line so well. He goes, "Is man indeed a walrus at heart?" And she's got her arms akimbo in the sky, and she goes,
"No,
no,
because." Oh my goodness.
So now
oh my goodness.
You know this is about to happen. So what do we cut to? The girlfriend.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, the movie tries to make her into a victim. You know, like there's this dialogue between Wallace and Teddy that's talking about, you know, Teddy's criticizing him on their podcast. And, you know, Wallace is just kind of like brushing him off. Like, it's not really that big of a deal, saying that Teddy was like, oh, you always side with her. You always side with Allie. And I'm just like, why is the first time I watched it when I was remembering it, which was, again, 4 years ago. But when I was remembering it, I don't remember her being this like I remember, you know, there were moments where she was definitely played up as being this just like a little bit of, I don't know, maybe victim is the wrong word.
I would classify her as a sympathetic.
Yeah, sympathetic character.
Yeah, she's definitely without a doubt in my mind. It's Wallace's character is the most developed throughout this film.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Howard's character.
Right.
She's possibly the third, but it trails, her character trails far behind the other two.
Right. This is a movie about Wallace and Howard. Everyone else is just dressing, and she's probably the one that they try and develop, but it seems, I mean, I wasn't very captivated by her as a character.
No, I mean, she did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
It's just the script didn't allow for her to be more than... But the script didn't allow for her to be developed further, which is fine because let's just drop this here because we've only made it 3 pages into my notes. This movie was made in 15 days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 I can see that.
Yeah. Let's just put that out there. They did a really fantastic job. The continuity, which is something I always look out for, is really good.
Mm-hmm.
The scenery, the delivery by the actors, like the... Overall, it's fantastic. My major contentions are generally over the overarching parts of the plot and some nitpicky stuff about delivery. Like,
mm-hmm.
I really am not going to be like, I won't point out that it doesn't pass the Beth Shadel.
Bechdel. Bechdel test.
Thank you. I always mess that up.
I'm not generally like worried too worried about that though. Yeah. Cause Teddy's in that scene. So if they had, the only way that it would have is if they removed, Wallace from like the one scene with more than two women in it. Though I will say that there are three speaking roles for women. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Oh, there's four.
Four?
Yeah, at least four.
Oh, yeah.
Because of
waitress.
Kevin Smith's wife's cameo. Okay, so we find out that girlfriend is cheating with, and I wrote dot, dot, dot.
I wrote dun, dun, dun.
Well, then we have different takes on how we feel about this. She gives this this monologue that's just like, I'm so broken inside and my dad would be so sad about it. And she's got the swelling tears that, like, I can't make myself cry. So, like, it's like one of the hallmarks of why I wouldn't make a great actress. But she's got these swelling alligator tears and this little, and I'm so sorry, Teddy, but this little chubby comes out and I write in my notes, oh, it's Teddy. And then I wrote, no sh-.
Yeah, see, for the first time I saw this scene, I could have sworn she was like giving an audition, or she was like practicing a monologue for a play or something like that. You know, it was well acted.
It's well delivered for sure.
Yeah, but I mean,
it definitely felt like a delivery though. It didn't feel like I don't know how long they had her standing in that corner. She was sitting on a bed looking at a camera.
right.
And it's one of actually two times that there is direct eye contact to the camera. The first one, I'm okay with this. The second one, I am super not okay with. And I wrote it down twice, so I got a yell about it at the end.
No, that's okay.
It should be noted that during this reveal, we have, at this point in the movie, seen Wallace's character say, "Ah, Chica, you can't go with me because Teddy says you make me not funny." Mm-hmm. And then he said to her, he made fun of her accent, which I couldn't pick up on at all.
Right.
And I super like making fun of accents. I don't want to make fun of a culture, but I will mimic your accent as hard as I can just because I'm an actress in my heart, even though I can't make myself cry.
Right.
Okay. So that was during the first bedroom scene.
Right.
This scene, is after what I was trying to point out was that he had played the same card on both of them, that she was making him unfunny and that Teddy was making him unfunny, so like he didn't want either of them there, and Teddy was, you know, jumping in on Allie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they both seem like they do better with each other when Wallace isn't there, at least for their part. I mean, for the little bit that we see it in the story, I felt like it was just a little bit of forcing her backstory. So the audience sympathizes with her. And this is part of the reason why I feel like they tried to turn her into a sympathetic character more than they should have. Mm. Because she's talking about how, if my father were still alive, he would just absolutely hate that I've spent all of this time. This woman who is probably in her mid-20s at the oldest. And she's talking about how she's like wasted her life on a jackass boyfriend. You know what? It happens, but your life does not end in your 20s.
Oh my gosh.
And I mean, I guess it makes sense. I mean, when just reflecting on it for the last few minutes, it does make sense that she would act that way if she is in her 20s.
Yes. She's definitely acting like end of the world business about this. Mm-hmm. That is definitely mid 20s for me. But, you know, 10 years out, I'm like, girl, you need some perspective. And it's probably, your perspective probably isn't the best when you've got two guys.
Right.
If your goal, and mind you, her goal is perceived to be that she wants to be faithful to one person. And she's just like, it's great to feel so normal and innocent around him, but I just can't stay away from the fact that you make me feel beautiful, Teddy.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of the more boring scenes for me.
I was okay with it because I knew it needed to happen, but I was very much like, okay, she's been cute and sexy this whole time and they need to give her depth, but I should probably eat more fiber too. I just didn't want to.
Yeah.
So this is where I wrote down. Okay. So I like have you watched the YouTube channel? Lord God. Okay. Have you watched the YouTube channel CinemaSins?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So I wrote, villain doesn't turn off or destroy the phone cliche. So towards the end of the film, you kind of see that he needs that kind of closure. Like I'll elaborate it at the end, but like, he kind of needs them to be found.
Right.
But
here's my question. What kind of a phone is still on after a day?
It's specifically 3 days. 3 days. He hasn't called me in 3 days. And then she starts boning Teddy, and that's what he calls.
How would Howard know to plug in the phone? I mean, I can understand if he doesn't, one, know how to turn it off. I can understand if he doesn't know how to plug in a phone.
I don't know a phone made in 2014.
That would be open. That would still be up.
And on.
And on. Thank you. So I don't know a phone that would still be on after 3 days.
Nope, I call bullshit on that.
Yeah.
Oh, my favorite quote. Okay, so then Wallace leaves a series of two phone calls, neither to the police.
Right.
Okay, he's in Canada, but like still.
I would think that if you're traveling to a foreign country, you're going to think you're going to, you know the emergency phone number.
I don't know. He's a bit of an asshole.
That's true.
Okay. So he makes these two phone calls. One's to his girlfriend, who I appreciate he calls first. Mm-hmm. And then two, and I think a more candid phone call to his bestie, Teddy. And the one line I wrote down, because I have to read you all the, if it's so good, I have to write it down. I don't want to die in Canada. I like that. I mean, I wouldn't mind dying in Canada. It seems like a very nice place to pass on.
But here's the thing. This is a very serious movie. It was written serious. It was directed serious. It was acted serious. But then you get these lines.
They're just so gloriously Kevin Smith.
And they're so gloriously, like, campy.
Yes.
That I feel like I would enjoy the movie a lot more if it just went full camp. And instead of trying to be a serious movie, I mean, it just occurred to me. This movie is a serious movie when it should have been a campy movie. This movie is acting like it doesn't know what it wants.
Mm. It's interesting because in the next in this, the arc of movies, the Yoga Hosers,
yeah,
it goes full camp, but it doesn't land as well as this one does.
Well, I mean, you know how we've been talking about Wallace, you know, putting up walls and putting up facades and putting up masks. This movie is almost trying to put up a mask to hide the levels of camp, but it still seeps through.
So you're saying that we haven't gone through the here we go around the mulberry bush, the monkey chasing the weasel for like the like hilarious clown to pop out and just be like, I'm Kevin Smith.
Well, no, it's just interesting how, I mean, we're talking, I mean, there's a character in the movie who is kind of putting up these facades, is not being fully genuine, and mm-hmm. you can see the cracks. Yeah. In this movie, you kind of see that same thing.
So the movie is Wallace.
Wallace is the movie.
We all don't want to die here in Canada.
Also, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
Let's go for it.
Wallace is getting turned into, because that's like the next scene. Sorry, I jumped ahead.
No, I don't think you're too far ahead. This is the
but it's still I'm a little there.
No, that's okay. Teddy, okay, I will note that after I Don't Want to Die in Canada, Teddy ignores his phone.
Right.
He knows that she hasn't spoken. He was supposed to be back the next day. He flew out one day, supposed mm-hmm. to come back the next from Canada. Day three, he was too busy boning his bestie's girlfriend mm-hmm. to answer the phone when he saw it. He just continues to brush his teeth, and I wanted to shove his toothbrush down his throat. Cold.
Yeah. Like, he couldn't even bother to tell Allie, hey, yeah, there's a phone. There's a phone call from... He's calling in. Like, if you are in...
But the sound was on, too. She was just in the next room. They have, like, the most obvious ringtone that right. they pulled from the podcast, this broadcast, right. some fan-made piece of thing. It's just very recognizable.
Mm-hmm. But it's like... She definitely doesn't do anything. But the fact that it's staring him right in the face.
It put a big ding in Teddy's character for me. Yeah. I was like, oh, not only are you the cheating best friend, but you're like, hold on, I got to smash before I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it cuts from that teeth brushing scene mm-hmm. to Howard now giving his monologue, which I was writing down these notes about the previous scene, and then I look up and I realize that Howard's been waxing poetic for like 2 or 3 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and he's been sewing this entire time, and I was like, what is he sew? Oh, right, this whole movie.
He's sewing the entire movie together.
He's like the Leslie Knope, everything's cured with quilts. Parks and Rec reference. he gives, it's hard to tell if this is like a super genuine moment of Howard's.
Mm-hmm.
We learn in this scene that Howard's parents were murdered, that the orphanage was turned into a mental asylum, and that mm-hmm. Howard suffered severe physical, mental, and sexual abuse. And then at 15, he escaped to the U.S. Mm-hmm. and now was back for, what did I call it?
To seek revenge on Canada?
Well, I wrote and now back for Walrus Exchange.
Well, exchange does make sense.
Oh, goodness.
Exchanging one for the other. I thought it was interesting. Like, he says, and at night the monsters come out and my parents were killed. And I was like, so he has a backstory like Batman?
Yeah, he could have been Batman, but he picked the wrong aquatic animal.
To be fair, his backstory doesn't end with his parents getting murdered. It ends with getting put into the system that pretty much was churning him out to grab, was just like feeding off of the money that the state that should have been going to him.
Yeah, he much more got the backstory of, and Sean Hall, feel free to call me out on this. He got much more the backstory of the Penguin than he did
right.
Batman.
Yeah.
Which was just kind of shuffled aside and put in the system and terribly abused. But then we cut to the Walrus and the Carpenter.
Oh, look. This is my note. Oh, look. Crazy is coming right around the corner. Oh.
My next note after the Walrus and the Carpenter, which I just wrote down with no context, because I know he quoted it. He which is, I love Alice in Wonderland, so the fact that he was quoting Walrus and the Carpenter, I was like, oh! And I, like, instantly went to Disneyland where I, like, wanted to quote it with him. I'm like, he's a strange murderer. Watch for the creepy. Don't be like, the Walrus and the Carpenter, na 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 na. Okay, my next note after Walrus and the Carpenter is, walruses never cry! No context.
Oh, but then the reveal, and I think it's interesting, the some of the visuals, like in the way that the camera's movement is.
They're very deliberate about the reveal. They don't give it to you all at once, and I think that's very important in all horror films, because, and M. Night Shyamalan is actually, I will vouch for you, sir, even though you don't need it, it's one of the things that he holds back best, because once you've seen the face of the monster, a lot of your momentum just dissipates. And it's interesting that this happens only about an hour into the film. So we've still got 40 more minutes, or maybe a little more, to explore this character. It's like, but you showed the face. You're only supposed to show the face in like the last 5 minutes. Come on. Everybody's watched Aliens. Everybody knows that it's supposed to be like the last 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is genius, especially for the development of Wallace. How do you develop after your tongue's been cut out? Kevin Smith did it,
right?
You know? Like,
right?
Yeah, but
well, I think only Kevin Smith could do it. I mean, try and give this kind of a project to anyone like John Carpenter, and you're probably going to see more about the transformation. You're going to see more of that. We didn't really see too much of the transformation you get Wallace with his leg cut off. You get a scene where he's getting sewn into it, but you don't really see him.
No, it's just his arms have been attached closer, and you've seen that both legs are now fully detached.
Right. Okay. Because I remember that from the first one, but then I know, like, after I saw the movie, I went online to take a look and at what, like, what it actually looked like. It's one of those things where I was like trying to remember. I can't remember seeing that today. I apologize.
No, that's okay. I actually didn't look yesterday, and today I specifically looked, and it was because of, I'm just gonna call people by their stereotypes that I do remember. Deb Quebec, he says, he's just like, and says over here, finds their bodies with their arms attached like little velociraptor arms or T-Rex arms. And I was like, is that really how it looks? And it is. Yeah. But it's obviously like reforming his body to fit within the suit itself.
Right. Now, the first time I saw this, the first thing that came into my mind was a Justin Long walrus monster, or a just Lulrusmon, which is like the worst Pokemon ever.
Okay. What class is it?
Well, I put him as like what type?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I put him with two psychic attacks and one water based. So maybe he would be more of a water based or a water type Pokemon, but I don't know anything about Pokemon. So a lot of this is just kind of coming out.
I think I'm totally with you because of the mental physical transformation, psychically, I get it.
The two attacks that he would have are like, horrifying, in which the opponent just taps out of the battle and lose the will to live.
Nice. Okay, cool. Okay, so at this point in my notes, I wrote, the suit is terrible or awesome. Is it covered in ears or assholes?
It's at one point I saw a face.
Yes. And then the second, well, yesterday I watched it in the evening, so it was dark in the living room, and it's already a very visually dark film. But today when we were watching it in the daylight, I was like, oh, it's faces and ears and stuff. But it would have been all right if there'd been a stray nipple or whatever.
That would have been hilarious.
It could have been good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we go from the big reveal, screaming and walruses don't cry, or walruses never cry, to Teddy and Allie have made it to the Canadian police.
Right.
Who are doubtful and sound reasonable. But also, it cuts back and now this is where the scenes start to like flip very quickly. Like, until we get to Deb Quebec, it actually flips pretty quick. So they're at the Canadian police department. That scene it's good. There's like a pun, there's like a reference to a joke they made on the podcast that I don't get, because I'm terrible at actor names. super. But the line, well, doesn't that just put the BM in the PM's coffee, is worth noting, and yeah. I might be using later.
Yeah. There's a lot of little, like, quips in this movie. And again, I think that's what Kevin Smith just excels at, are those little things.
He's a master of the reference.
Right.
And and he's definitely not afraid to put an inside joke in, even if you don't get it. It's not for you. Duh.
Right.
But this scene, although not like super commanding, is where, Allie and Teddy get the, Depp Quebec's. I'll stop until you fix me.
No. Depp Quebec is right on point. So Johnny Depp plays this detective, right?
He's a former police officer.
And he's they end up meeting him at.
Before that's the swimming scene, though.
Oh, okay.
So it goes, meet the police, get the phone number, to the swimming scene. Now he puts him in the water, and he's just like, and now you must swim. And there's just this, the poor walrus. I guess I should say Wallace. The wall is just, he's like sinking in this suit, and he looks under the water, and there's all of these dead attempts that look exactly like him, but are all skeletal. And probably the spookiest actual scene in the entire film.
Right.
But that's all it is. There's some walrus people corpses.
They actually show a decaying head. So all you see is like human skeleton with tusks.
And a whole bunch of flappity skin.
Yeah. And an eyeball.
Yeah. Which is funny because then Depp Quebec. He's like, we found the bodies all over the place. And I'm like, but they're all at the bottom of the pool, Holmes. They're all at the bottom of the pool. I don't know how he gets out of the water, by the way.
Well, they found some of them. They probably didn't find all. Well, they said that they found, like, at least the feeling that I was getting is that they were, they didn't find all of them. They found some of them, and they probably assumed that some others were missing as well.
Well, this is all expositioned in the scene with Depp Quebec. Mm-hmm. Which I wrote in my notes as this French Canadian guy. And then he says that they have 23 confirmed kills and 24 probably with their friend, but there's still that pool of dead walrus guys.
Right. So there's actually a higher body count.
Yeah, but that's all we know. So this is where Depp Quebec starts talking. It's not as unbearable. It's just that I've watched it twice in 2 days and I'm like, yeah, this drags on a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. My note is like the way that some of these scenes are, it goes from like horror to dull. And it's mostly because they're trying to put in exposition and showing you how these two characters end up coming back, showing you how these characters actually come into how they end up getting there, because they're trying to get there for the final reveal. Mm-hmm. That's the main reason why we're seeing them go through the police system. They obviously wanted that character in there.
Yes, yes. And this is a character that would originally be played by Quentin Tarantino, who thought he was going out for Michael Park's part. Right. But note that I want to scream is the cops are like, nah, we don't believe you, but there's this guy who's been on the case for a long time. And then Depp Quebec straight up is just like, yes, we found like 23 bodies. And I'm like, yo, cops, 23 bodies, Holmes. That's a lot of bodies. Maybe it's beyond a shadow of a doubt that you got somebody out there right now. And then they're just like, no, we leave it to the guy who does not work for us anymore.
Yeah, yeah. The indifference that the detective has, he only has like one scene in this entire movie. And it's, I mean, he you know, says, you know, he's like, oh, this is very shocking, this is very scary, but then doesn't do anything, just kind of speaks to the absurdity in the camp that is just kind of like seeping.
Because this is the only scene that Johnny Depp owns completely.
Right. And it seemed like this was a character that they wanted to have this character in the movie.
Yeah, they're like, character actor and go. I mean, but obviously there's a great relationship between Smith and Depp and between their daughters. Definitely enough so that they felt like moving forward with the second film in the arc. Mm-hmm. As much as this scene had some great exposition that we needed for plot, and as much as I wrote down maybe once or twice that it fell a little flat to me, it does cut to the Depp Quebec meeting Howard.
Right. Which is a scene that has two people in it, both of which Howard is using this list that he at the dinner scene, when he's singing the Itsy Bitsy Spider, he's singing it like the Itsy Bitsy Spider.
It's like, where did you get this from?
It is so, but it's so creepy and it's so effective that when you see it in kind of this full scene, at least for me, it seemed like it was just kind of like this is a character that we at this point have seen is deranged.
Super manipulative.
And he also goes ahead and he's using this really creepy lisp that just...
It's disarming, really.
Yeah.
And what the IMDb page was saying was that at this point, to film this scene, he just kind of let these two character actors who just fall into a role and kind of roll around in it and chew on it and stuff. He just let him go. Mm-hmm. And the scene is, it's unnerving. It's not necessarily off-putting, but it's one of those moments where they could have taken 1 or 2 minutes off the pad time. And I think still done honor to the act. It's incredible acting, but mm-hmm. look, as a fan of the theater, you can have incredible acting that draws on forever.
Yeah, this scene could have definitely been cut down by like at least 2 minutes, if not more.
But I wouldn't have it without it because it does speak to the fact that at the climax of the film, when Depp comes in and there's this walrus creature and we haven't even gotten to the, when he sees Howard.
Yeah.
You could tell that they didn't need to divulge. They didn't have to go any further. We knew that Depp would have instantly known what the sauce was all about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and then, okay, but in that scene, can I just say that he's like, oh, missing persons for that hockey player whose name I didn't write down because mm-hmm. names are hard. He's like, yes, I'm just a simple homicide detective working on a missing persons case. I don't know. Please tweet us at ShockedApplaud. If you know if a homicide detective would be working on a missing persons case, because it seems like it would be a different department.
Or that a police officer would necessarily be saying that information to, would be giving this kind of information to someone who could very easily be a suspect. Now, he probably didn't, did he not say?
He said he said the missing hockey player's name.
Yeah, but he didn't say, he was just looking for information. He wasn't actually looking at this guy as though he was a suspect.
No, but he did mention that he was a homicide detective, yeah. And that's pretty pointed.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like you would tell, even if you were a homicide detective, if you would necessarily say that you're a homicide detective.
Yeah. Okay. So Depp Quebec, whose name I will eventually know, is no longer, they cut to back to the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is where, Howard waxes poetic at Wallace for a little while, who I should say he's now only referring to as Mr. Tusk.
Mm-hmm.
And he waxes poetic at him, and I've watched it twice, and I still can't pay attention to that scene very well until he stands up and he's like, you must be hungry. And when food is involved, I pay attention, and he drops another line that I had to write down. That is a mackerel.
Isn't this the scene where he talks about, where we see the flashback to Howard on the rock with Mr. Tusk OG, and he's eating him? It's like, this is the moment where he pretty much reveals, like, he ate his pet friend to survive.
Mm.
Or was that...
No, I think you might be right. You could be right. It could be in the next scene, though. Mm-hmm. Because, right after he gives him the fish, he leaves and shuts the door, and then he immediately opens the portal, and he watches to make sure that he eats the fish, and he does. And there's this stupid cup in the background we should note.
Mm-hmm.
And my next note says, die of infection already.
Will Wallace start a tooth suit riot to survive? Or will the Wolverine be jelly of Wallace's opportunity to die in Canada? Do friends let friends call friends cheating on friends? What would the roaming charges look like for something like that? Hey, this is your audio engineer and mid-story crisis actor Jonathan, reminding you that someone needs rescuing. So why not go to patreon.com now and search for Shocked and Applaud. By becoming one of our first patrons, we'll thank you personally in a future episode. You can also find us on Twitter at Shocked Applaud or Facebook at Shocked and Applaud. We'll have a homepage for you to favorite soon as well, download latest episodes, and catch some off-air critiques of the best worst film that the world has to offer. After that, swing back to our episodes for What's This? The conclusion of Tusk? What am I going to do with my life? Oh, right. There are more episodes to edit. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning The Peculiar.